FYLP is sponsored by CapturedPrey.com. Visit CapturedPrey.com today for all your import and third-party Transformers needs, and save even more through the Captured Prey loyalty program. You can also save on shipping on domestic orders of $150 or more. See website for details. CapturedPrey.com. Great toys, great prices, great service.
In a cold, faraway world, a battle is raging between evil and good. From the stars.
Perceptia here. Welcome to Transformers for Your Listening Pleasure, TFYLP for short. Join us and discuss the latest in Transformers fandom. Now, where did I put that chorus stop? Ratchet, will you take the chorus stop?
Transformers, defenders of truth, robots who fight.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to TFYLP, Transformers for Your Listening Pleasure, episode number 280. Recorded March 3rd, 2018. I am your host, Dron Land, a.k.a. Weird Wolf. Along with me this evening is Headmaster Don.
Hey, everybody.
Jim Black.
Hello.
And your sexy voice again.
I know, right?
The sexy radio voice. And joining us once again, a man that needs no introduction, Mr. Aaron Archer. Welcome back to TFYLP.
Hey, glad to be here.
This is, as I mentioned on last week's episode, this is a pre-recorded episode, largely in part because my computer is just not, with recent updates and everything, is just not able to broadcast live. So until I'm able to get a computer that is, able to do so, we're going to do the pre-record, temporarily. This seems to be working fine. So we're going to do that. That is part of the reason why we're pre-recording. Another reason we're pre-recording is that as this airs, I am currently at Lexington Comic Con in Lexington, Kentucky. So if you are in that area today, please drop by and check us out at the Captured Prey booth. I believe we'll be on the second floor of that one. It is a huge show, thousands of attendance. I know Chuck Norris is scheduled to be here, and lots of Power Ranger guests, lots of...
Allow me to correct you. The convention is actually scheduled to be at Chuck Norris.
Yes, yes, yes.
I want to clarify that.
He doesn't do push-ups. He pushes the earth down.
Yes.
And all memes associated with stuff. There's lots of wrestling guests there. You know, I'm a huge wrestling fan, so I'm giddy for that. Star Trek The Next Generation, Jonathan Frakes, Commander Riker's going to be there. So I hope to get to meet all those people. You know, of course, great toys. So if you're in the area, please stop by the Capture Prey booth and be sure to check us out. I know Orson is going to have some of the Unrustable Bastards there. The Kickstarter exclusive Otomo, very limited numbers, will be on sale at Lexington Comic Con. So if you want to pick up a Kickstarter exclusive Otomo, stop by the Captured Prey booth, because that's the only place that's going to be available at conventions until they are sold out. And I know Orson got exactly one case. So that's how limited they are for him. So check me out. Check us out at Capture Prey at Lexington Comic Con. As always, TFYLP is on Twitter at TFYLP and on Facebook.com/groups/TFYLP if you want to continue to talk with us on there. Tonight's episode... we're going to talk a little bit about something. You know, last episode we talked about lines that we had high hopes for, and once they came out, we kind of were largely disappointed, or our interest fell off, or they just didn't really succeed. Tonight we're going to be talking about a Transformers line that was, I guess, scheduled to happen and then didn't. We're going to find out a little bit about that, you know, some history behind that. The line is, a lot of people may have heard of it. If you've been in the fandom for any length of time, you've heard the term Transtech. It was scheduled to come after Beast Machines, in the slot, I guess RID was supposed to come in, I guess. What RID filled in.
Yeah, pretty much.
And around 2001-ish, and for some reasons that we'll probably talk about here tonight, it just didn't come to be. Lots of great designs were shown. I believe Transtech Starscream was one of the first ones that we saw. And I remember seeing it on TFW, and I was really, really excited for this line. You know, growing up with Generation 1, I wasn't much on the Beasts at the time. I didn't have as much of appreciation for them then as I do now. And I was really eager to get back to more vehicular forms for Transformers. And Transtech was taking what was great about Beast Wars, some of the great toys, and bringing vehicles to the line, or giving them vehicular form. Don, do you want to tell us a little bit about what you know about Transtech?
Well, coming off of Beast Machines, I was extremely disappointed. We've talked about before how Beast Machines it's just not my thing. But I was hearing rumors at BotCon, this Transtech stuff. We were getting bits and pieces coming out. I was still on Alt Toys Transformers at the time, and there was wild speculation that this was going to be like a new G1 set on Cybertron, and they were rebooting everything to get away from the Beasts. And, you know, just all the stuff you hear whenever you hear the slightest bit of information, everybody
rumors start flying.
And just runs like the Flash with the slightest crumb of information. And then we saw, after so many years in the fandom, everything starts to blend. But I remember the Optimus Prime picture showing up with the truck mode, the half track kind of truck mode, kind of like what we eventually
almost
got.
Almost a War Within.
Yeah, exactly. You know, exactly. The Ford front, the back, kind of like Cup, but a little more beefy. And
those
more
arms, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, monkey truck, as it was called, affectionately.
Exactly. Yeah. And a lot of people said, oh, this is going to be a continuation of Beast Machines. They're going to bring Primal back, and then you'll have Megatron come back. And this is them coming back to finish up and set all the wrongs that happened in Beast Machines. This is going to fix everything that happened wrong in Beast Machines.
All the sins committed, you are forgiven.
Yeah, yeah, that's one thing I kept seeing a lot of, is people thought this was going to be the fix for Beast Machines where it left off. Other than that, it was just a lot of rumors, a lot of speculation. And then we heard, to my wallet's immense dismay, that Robots in Disguise was coming over, that I had already paid for importing the entire Wave 1, as I've mentioned Mr. Archer before. Thank you for that. So I wound up buying them all again.
Fooled you!
Yes. So you got some good items.
Yeah, twice. They were so good, I got them twice. But so
at least I changed the deco and stuff.
They're pride and joy. I'm hoping for a Masterpiece Fire Convoy at some point. But that's all I really remember, is a lot of rumors, a lot of speculation. It's going to fix Beast Machines. It's going to be a G1 reboot. They're scrapping everything and starting. Pretty much that's what I kept hearing, is they didn't know what it was going to be, but it was going to be either a fix for Beast Machines, or they're going to scrap everything and start over, is what the two things I heard the most of at the time.
Jim, what do you remember about Transtech?
Transtech, a lot of what I remember were some of the really, really outlandish modes for the different characters. One that sticks out in my mind was Cheetor. I had kind of the wheels integrated into his legs. I thought that was pretty neat, because it was so far outside of the convention that we were used to, which Beast Machines got into that a bit. You know, where it's not just like a blocky robot. You know, it doesn't have to conform to any one, you know, set thing. You know, I mean, Beast Wars did that to a point, you know, but even look at, you know, Optimal Optimus or Tiger Hawk or something like that, you still have a little bit of that blocky feel, but that was all just kind of blown away with Beast Machines, and then later on with the designs we saw for Transtech. Yeah. And I think the wheel thing, that kind of came back for Animated Blur, didn't it?
I think Animated Blur was actually given a Transtech Cheetor homage in the Collector's Club.
Yeah.
I you know, Derek Wyatt is such a fan. I wouldn't put it past him. I can't confirm it, but I wouldn't put it past him to have homaged that Transtech mold in Blur, but it's also a good design regardless, so he could have independently got there too. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. So, Aaron, you know, you've heard what we saw as the fans, you know, from back in the day. You know, this is what we saw, this is what we heard, this is how we felt. What was it really? What was the purpose of Transtech? What was it? And how did it come to be?
Well, I was on the periphery of the team that worked on that, and then certainly inherited files and folders and stacks of art very soon after. And some of my friends worked on it internally at Hasbro on the art, along with Draxel Jump and Ken Lashley, who's a big name in comics, who helped design a lot of these characters. So I just want to be clear that I'm giving a half-step story myself, because some of the players just aren't, unfortunately, some of them aren't even with us anymore. So I'll give you my best recollection of being a guy next to the team. Okay, so that's
you had a more of a front row seat than we did.
yeah, no doubt. So it definitely that a lot of that development was happening on the toy side back then. A lot of that that mainframe would get would be the finished models. They did not involve themselves in the early development. That would have been an added expense for the animation. So the Kenner design team, Fantasy Factory at the time is what it was called, you know, basically started creating characters, and a lot of them were based on what was happening on Beast Machines. They were kind of guiding, not unlike I guided the Unicron trilogy from a creative strategy standpoint. There was another group of characters who or employees who guided the Beast Wars, Beast Machines into Transtech things. Mm-hmm. They were working on these things as the next sequel to Beast Machines, right? Everything started changing in 2000 at the Cincinnati office, and I'm sure in the Rhode Island office, unbeknownst to the employees in the Cincinnati office, that episode one was not as good as it needed to be. And, you know, the foundation by which everything is designed and planned started shifting, right? So
everything starts and ends with Star Wars.
I don't totally want to say it that way, but, you know, if Beast Machines had been doing better, this wouldn't have been as big a deal. But when everything was shaky, particularly the big thing in Star Wars at the time, it made for some decisions down the road. So Beast Machines was ongoing. It was kind of strange. The team had a very a slow roll approach to getting back to vehicles, clearly. They didn't want to get back to a true truck right away. So they were still exploring weird forms and transitional forms between monkeys and trucks and cheetahs and speed and those kinds of things. You can see that very plainly in those designs. And they were exploring those things, and they were designing them up. You can find them online. I think largely these designs have been made public of all the crazy jet planes and cars and trucks and, you know, that they were looking at. And a lot of that stuff is the Draxel Jump, Ken Lashley stuff that's out there. And during that development, there's also some storyline things that are happening, kind of just directional pitches. So internally, that team could go in and say, yeah, we're going to go this direction. And it was all about finding the transformative power last year. Now this year, it's going to be about capturing that power and turning into something bigger and better. And that was kind of the, you know, two sentence brief that I'm sure the animation team would have gone off on and figured out more deeply. I am not sure any animation development went too far. I don't think anything went too far. There may be a treatment or something out there.
Didn't you say that they were waiting for like the finished designs and it really never got that far? Or?
Yeah. They would have, they worked right up until the last minute on each episode because of the, at the time, that CG show was pretty impressive technologically. So they were pushing it to its boundaries even then. So every Beast Machines episode was delivered and all that stuff.
Well, even up until Transformers Prime, wasn't it like some episodes were like finished like the week before it aired or something?
Yeah, that can happen. I mean, it depends on how fast you need that thing out. And yeah. So, they would have been finishing up Beast Machines as a development group and would not probably have had time to get out of that pipeline to look at anything else. So that was, I'm thinking, largely all done in the Cincinnati office with that Fantasy Factory group as they prepped for, what could be a group of characters and shows. Now, concurrent to that, how toy development works, you still got to hit the dates. So at some point, somebody must have said, well, let's go with these best designs with Takara, or let's see if Takara can execute these. We did work with Takara can we test this out? Can you make a model that goes from A to B, and it's a compelling experience? We've talked a lot about that with Transformers Animated. You know, could they get that look? Mm-hmm. So I have seen enough models on TransTech to wonder if it was a full first wave more so than just a group of test models. I can't confirm that, but there were too many models at too many price points that were finished for me to think that it was just testing things out. And those models were quite complete as far as their fit and finish.
Starscream, like a gray proto?
Yeah. So that's what I consider a tooling model is what we called it. We would take that apart, and, make our mold plans and then our deco plans and so on and so forth. So there's too many of those models and they're too well finished. The Starscream model has a working light in it. Mm. I'm not sure if that's ever been made aware in any of the documentation, but I know that one worked. I know I played with the Cheetor one. The one that I often bring up that I saw, we obviously came out with the Megabolt Megatron at the deluxe scale. Mm-hmm. So some of these models did actually come out in the RID era. So
Megabolt was a TransTech.
Yeah, that was a TransTech design. Nice. That got to a certain degree. Now I saw a model that was at least two times the size of that Megatron.
Oh wow!
That had a feature in it that you rolled it, and it kind of had some pincher type things that ate small, like I would call them Minicon Optimus and Cheetor. Oh, wow. And they were that kind of that scale, and that was the feature. Like it was this big. It was going to become, I think, like a Unicron head, like a giant floating Megatron head or something.
Would it have been in effect kind of the equivalent to like the ship mode?
Yeah, probably
that we saw in the Beast Machines series, or something akin to it.
Yeah, but that's what they were working on. I know here's another factor to take into account, so I'm trying to put everybody in the time and place, because it's not just, oh, these toys got made and they didn't come out, right?
There is a whole story.
You also, you also had the fact that Takara had a very difficult time airing any of these episodes. For the Japan market, everybody knows they need 52 episodes. They air them once. They don't rerun anything. They put them out on DVD 2 months later. That's just their model. And so when Hasbro were doing these 13 episode Beast War, you know, it was kind of difficult for Takara to air in the Japan market. So that's why they had to make Beast Wars Neo and things like that to kind of get to 52 episodes. So Beast Machines made no sense for the Japanese market. They thought that those forms were pretty whack, right? they were not something a collector would want, like a fine-tuned car, you know, mm-hmm. like they were obviously thinking about for RID. And they were not fantastical enough either in some ways. So for the Japanese market, I think they looked at that whole series as kind of weird. And so the idea that they would then pick up Transtech, it was like, they were like, we're just basically making toys for the world market. We're not going to air any of this. So it really wasn't good for the partnership at that time either.
Put a strain on the relationship.
They just couldn't benefit from it. So yeah. it was just kind of a one-way street, which, you know, as you see, we turned the corner with Armada, you know, that benefit opened up immensely, how we worked together. So, you know, you wanted to work better with Takara and Hasbro. You wanted that to go better. You had the market shifting with the toy market with Star Wars, and they were changing where Hasbro was going to be located. You know, our office was located in Cincinnati. They were moving us to Rhode Island. You had a show that really wasn't working on the market that it was in anyway. And you had a charismatic new leader coming in, Brian Goldner, who was like, yeah, this stuff's all great and interesting, but let's just get back to basics. You know, let's just get back to vehicles. How do we do that? And everyone that was like dying for that were like, yes, please. And some of the people that were like slow rolling it were like, well, we got this theory and, you know, they got reassigned. I ended up inheriting Transformers and, the rest is a little bit history, but the decision was made, I think in late 2000, probably September of 2000, that we were not going to go forward with Transtech, that we were going to seriously look at importing RID or Car Robots at the time. It didn't even have the name RID, right? Mm-hmm. It was just this. We just got, I've told you guys this one other time. One day we just got giant boxes. So I'll transition here. So at the end of 2000, that's when they told us, hey, we're moving to Rhode Island, right? And some of those guys that were on Transformers were the ones that I'm not going to make that move. Thank you very much. They moved on. And I raised my hand and said, I'll take it. So then I started working on all this stuff. So I inherited like this kind of weird mess. Like, well, we have these models. We're finishing up this weird show that you don't have to do anything with because it's already going. We got all these new toys from Japan coming in. So they sent these giant boxes of every Car Robot item they were making. And the Galgaigar stuff and the all that stuff, right? We talked about. So it was everything they were making of that era to like re-engage the Hasbro design team was shifting. It was shifting from the guys that had been doing it that looked at it a particular way to Takara having an opportunity to kind of go, hey, we also like this stuff. Kind of like, let's get back together versus you making a show that we just make the toys for you from. And that's how Armada, you know, looks the way it looks. Kind of, we got back to that more of that classic stuff, right?
The articulation, more
yeah. Yeah, articulation was really big to the previous designer. You know, that was everything to that guy. Not as much to me, obviously. So you could see that the individual designers also can influence some of those decisions. So I'm getting away a little bit from Transtech. So basically, in that transition, Transtech really quickly just died like that. It was like, Takara doesn't want it. Beast Wars isn't working. We're going to go a different direction. We're going to go full vehicle. Let's develop something completely new. Aaron, go figure that out. And just like that, all that work had just been stopped.
So basically, the move from Cincinnati to Rhode Island is a large part of it. because a lot of the people,
it's an aspect of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The people,
and that new leader came in and wanted to get right to vehicles. So all these weird vehicles, they were dead on arrival then too. And that's why we, you know, got to Armada.
Well, two things, Mr. Archer. One, I would have absolutely loved to have seen what you could have done with Galgaigar. I would have absolutely loved to have seen a product from Hasbro, the Galgaigar set in maybe Optimus Prime colors, the story behind. I would have paid cash money.
That stuff's fun. I like that stuff. I still, yeah.
Galgaigar himself is fun.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it seems to me that with this new, with them announcing at Toy Fair, the War for Cybertron, with what we know, it sounds like it's a more than meets the eye, pre-G1 time period on Cybertron before they leave for Earth, is what we're kind of thinking as a fandom right now. Do you think maybe some of these Transtech designs could still be used for pre-Earth modes? Because it seems like if the actual designs still exist in a Bible or a binder or a book, you would not want to throw that away. You'd put it on a shelf and say, we keep all the stuff that we think of, because at some point down the road, we might be able to use this or that. So it seems like to me that if that still exists as a thing that they can reference, it might could come back in this War for Cybertron line, because you've got pre-Earth vehicle modes pretty much built in right there.
Yeah, I think that usually comes down to the individual designers, how they mentally approach their job, whether they can find value in old work, invent it, or just have the attitude of new is better. I know Takara keeps everything. And if I had some purpose to email Takara and go, hey, can you give me all the sketches I did for X products? You know, they would have them.
Yeah,
I that's no disrespect to Hasbro when I say that you couldn't do that with Hasbro. They don't keep the files the same way, but, all those designs exist, Don. Yeah. All the matter of who wants to look at them and pull them out, you know, and why.
It's like Rick told us, you know, a lot of the original Generation 1 box art, a lot of that got thrown out, you know.
It just seems like that with the line being that close to being fully conceived and ready to start the next stage, it would save them a lot of hassle for War for Cybertron if this stuff was already that far planned out. That's just what I think.
Yeah.
So we know that I guess a large part of the Transtech designs got to the what a lot of fans refer to as the gray proto stage. How much farther beyond that is it till we get to finished product ready to go to store shelves? Just to get an idea of how close it was to actual release.
Yeah. So those gray models, whether you call them tooling models or prototype models or, you know, whatever, there's any number of terms, those are what would go to a factory to get cast, to be made into molds. So most of them never got made to a point where you could make them in plastic, right?
Mm-hmm.
Those are all handmade mold or handmade toys, essentially, those gray prototypes. So other than maybe that Megatron, I don't think any of them ever made it to a tooling stage where they could be, you know, they're not hiding somewhere and just waiting to have hot plastic put into them.
So the Megatron did make the tooling.
I think that's
right. Yeah.
I think that's the only one. Now, did the only other one is Cerberus,
which came as R.I.D. Bruticus.
Bruticus. I'm confused in my memory about where that one came from. That could be a Transtech also.
I thought it was a discarded Beast Machines idea.
It might have been, but that's the only other oddball one that I knew existed before I came onto the line, and it didn't. It was like a lot. So what happens is, I'll give you a little insight. Every toy that goes to a certain level of development, once it becomes tooled, Hasbro is almost committed to making it. Otherwise, the part of the deal that Hasbro and Takara work out, Hasbro eats the whole bill, right? So ideally, anything that gets made to a tool will come out eventually, right, in some capacity, or just costs a lot on the budget, which is fine too. But so I remember that three-headed dog was one of those items that I inherited a finished item that I didn't know what the hell it was, because I don't think it was in the show, and I didn't like, I decoed that thing. I had no idea what I was decoing, you know, and why. I made up that goofy story that he guarded, you know, Megatron's prison, and you know, that was about it. But that's one of the characters that I remember sticking out as far as being a confused item around that time. I didn't know if that was a Beast Machines or Transtech or what.
I think that's the only release we got of it too, wasn't it? Was it ever recolored?
Yeah,
I don't believe that it was.
I don't think so. That wasn't deemed a very good item.
No, I remember I got it. And
Battle Unicorn. That one was a late Beast Machines that got put into RID as well.
Yeah, I remember BBTS had
a
special run of them made because they were so hard to find at retail.
Yeah.
So that's like there are more loose ends on the Beast Machine side than there were ever front ends on the Transtech side. Like it was really a development part of the plan, and when that development needed the change, that was it. Now, so it really is it's more of a lost concept than a lost toy line.
You brought up a few minutes ago, Hasbro footing the bill and the cost involved in getting, you know, so far into the process. Yeah. And it reminded me of something we talked about just a little bit ago. We had, briefly discussed the crowdfunding that they're doing with the Jabba the Hutt thing for Star Wars.
Yep.
And I almost wonder if Transformers were to attempt that, like we considered, like, the possibility of a Unicron, for instance. I wonder how realistic of a possibility such a thing would be among the fans if they were to somehow go back to some of the Transtech designs and just pick some of the best ones, or the ones that were furthest along, and have those as an offering to reach goal X.
I don't know where they are with it now. I'm going to take a half step back and I can get back to how they're doing the HasLab thing. But like, they were really into the fan choice and fan voting,
right?
Making the new characters and some, you know, all of that. You know, I wonder if there's a way to have the greatest almost hits option, you know, across a spectrum of lines. There's been a few characters that haven't gotten made, correct? You know, you know, that would almost be cool that'd be an interesting way for Hasbro to approach it as well. Sure. You know, could they, you know, there's these lost gems out there. Which ones should we retool? And then fund it that way as well. Cause then you could really see where, you know, East Neo Unicron, here it comes.
You know, that thing actually looked really, really good.
I had that thing in my office for about 2 months.
Wow. And,
you know, it was really cool, and it was early days, 2001. I don't think I had been to a BotCon yet. Everybody that came into my office was just like, oh, like, that's really cool. Like, it was really cool.
never really reached.
I really hated to send that one back to Tokyo.
That one never really reached tooling, did it? It just got to the gray
print. No. So that's what happens. You build these models and then you cost them, and then you realize, oh well, we're gonna have to do this, that, or the other, or it's too heavy, or you know, whatever it is. And that one was always a little too expensive for just the Japanese market, which it fit their show. So there was a lot of enthusiasm on the Japan side to do Unicron, which showed in that model, and that kind of helped influence us as we
for Armada Unicron
made our choices around Armada Unicron. And then so Takara was kind of happy they could have a Unicron. We were happy because they have a big item. So that's kind of how that all. So, you know, when you make, and that's how it works, really, behind the scenes, you know, you're always inspired by all kinds of things that, I mean, toys is, you know, probably 80% stuff that you pitch that doesn't go anywhere. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that seeing some of those old models always inspired other things. And, you know, so TransTech lives, you know, you just can't tell how.
Well, Mr. Archer, it's a slight story and a question for you. When I was in my early teens, I sent in a design to Hasbro. I created an aerial bot or robot anyway.
They were making Transformers in your teens, Tom?
Yes, they were. You know, it was out of stones and wood, but yes.
mostly Adobe mud brick.
He had those Japanese Transformers early.
But I did send in the design, and I got back the letter in the Hasbro because they were still using the two kids back to back. They were still using that logo. I'm not sure what the official name is. That's just the way I remember it. And it was in blue, and it was addressed to me. They thanked me for my time, that they could not accept my submission at the time.
It's called a form letter, Don.
Yeah, I know. But I'm saying, though, they actually got it, and they replied. I was happy about that. I was sorry that they didn't use my design for the robot that I called Air Raid 7 months before the aerial bots came out. But with you being a former designer and you having all this skill, could you not freelance for Hasbro to get some of these designs that you like TransTech to possibly back in the mix? Since your designs would carry weight with them?
No, I don't think it quite works like that.
Okay, I wasn't sure. I just thought maybe that would be something you could do?
No, probably not.
Okay.
I had my time in the sun. I don't think anybody wants to hear from me, Doc.
I want that 2 foot tall Jumbo Machinder Optimus with the purposely loose missile firing part.
I do want that too.
Don, they would just send him the same form letter.
That's right.
I just didn't know if that was
pursuant to your retirement package. Please don't call us.
I just thought maybe it would be a way to get some of the stuff that you remember that you liked, maybe back into the mix. You know, with your name recognition.
I mean, let's cut to the chase, fellas. I mean, you know, it wasn't my choice not to do TransTech, but as a new designer on the stuff, it wasn't my interest to look at that stuff either. You know, so some of that, you know, designer arrogance, you know, everybody has it. You want to leave your stamp. You want to kind of put your mark on it.
God, somebody else's, yeah.
You stamp with the giant stamps. Well, I mean, you are probably the most famous person coming out of Hasbro other than Optimus Prime himself.
No, I don't know about that. But,
Well, you did with a character
and
animated.
I don't even know what I'm saying now.
Sorry.
Don, you're making him blush now. Stop.
No, I'm sorry. It's just, you're a wig in the toy industry, and it just seems like all your ideas not being able to be used is kind of a waste.
Well, they everything has a cycle. I mean, everything's trend-based. So, you know, clearly, they've been focusing on, you know, Bumblebee and the characters there and the movies and stuff. So that's what they're focused on. You know, honestly, some item from 2000 or 99 or whenever that stuff was designed, you know, just isn't on the radar until it needs to be. Places like the BotCons and things like that were great places, to try to put those things out, and almost now it feels like there's fewer and fewer of those opportunities, and or focus on Hasbro's side to utilize some of those opportunities.
Yeah.
So, you know, trying to put my best hat on there with it, but, you know, sometimes stuff just dies on the side of the road. I've said that to you guys before. you know, not every great idea deserves to be brought to the full, you know, to the shelf. I'll also say that those Transtech models they changed price. They changed the cost dynamic of the pro. Yeah, they were going to be on that upper end, and not that Car Robots the brothers were any less intricate. That was another factor. They were pretty intricate models, and we wanted to get to more feature based. Clearly, mm-hmm. with what you got out of Armada,
right.
A little bit more toy, a little more fun, a little more intuitive, a little less slick, high end design. You know, no feature, fancy story. You know, you can see that they were just trying to get back to basics, and yeah. Transtech represented something that was just in the middle.
Plus, you wound up having the collectible gimmick for the Japanese market specifically, because we're still up until the last couple of years, we were still getting special mini cons and various packs and stuff. So the collectability of a mini con has far exceeded the original run of the series.
Yeah, I mean, when I humbly put my list of accomplishments together on the brand, you know, the introduction of mini cons and naming them mini cons, which, you know, I'll respect the MicroMasters, you know, but that aspect of it, I, you know, that's a big thing to leave behind. And that's kind of cool that they lingered and they're kind of now a part of the lore all the time. Not just that one Armada series. So that is kind of cool when that stuff can happen.
A couple questions here. One of them you may not be able to answer, but what do you know about the new character that was rumored in Transtech, Immorticon? Anything?
I don't remember that name. Was there a form associated?
In the Transtech wiki, on TF wiki, one new character was rumored, and its name was Immorticon. Let's see here.
I thought you said Mordicon, not Immorticon.
No, Immorticon. It was a technomorph named Immorticon. According to the wiki, it says, what is known is that he was a member of the elite class of the city Axiom Nexus, on a peaceful Cybertron where no Transformer Civil War had ever broke out. Let's see here. A picture they have of him, I guess, looks sort of like Armada Demolisher in vehicle form. Robot form, not so much, maybe. I've just got it on my phone. I'm going to hold it up here. I don't know if anybody can see it, but.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember that design. We like that design. I think Shockwave became that design years later. But I don't remember the characters. That I wasn't part of any of the copy. I didn't see anything written down or, you know, paragraphs on what this character or that character were meant to be. So I can't confirm that. Although after this, I'm gonna try to dig out some stuff with another person to see if there can be some loose threads thrown back into here. On the story sides, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that was one here. It was kind of thrown in there as a new character, and there wasn't a whole lot, you know, outside of that picture and what I read there on the wiki. The other question I had, you mentioned him earlier before, Draxel Jump. Tell us about him, since these are largely his designs.
Yeah, so Draxel Jump was a studio that was founded by the artist Ken Lashley, who is like a huge name in comic books. He does all kinds of covers and stuff. And he is a friend of Hasbro and has been.
Oh, your video froze.
And so me or you?
You froze. Maybe it might have been me. I don't know.
Well, on my end, the entire thing froze. Everybody just
Skype. Yeah.
All right. So Ken Ken is a guy from Canada who does comic books and stuff these days, and was a big friend of Hasbro, still is, does all kinds of work for their, does some of the Comic-Con box art and stuff, and real fun guy. He did a lot of those designs, his studio and him did those designs. So, that's kind of how they did it back then. They would have outside guys, draw up just a ton of stuff and then kind of, put stuff up on a wall and circle the ones that people like more. Let's change this color, that color. Very, very efficient, creation. So that's what he's about. So he's a great guy and a heck of a talent. And he helped me on the early Armada pitches as well. He helped me make some really cool boards that helped sell that in.
So let's focus in on, Transtech has essentially died. RID has been, the choice has been made to transition with RID into Armada. Walk us through whenever the decision was brought down, okay, Transtech is dead, we're going to go with RID. What happened then?
So the toy industry is a fast-moving industry. You literally drop what you were doing and pivot to the next request. Probably there's already a schedule crisis involved, right? So what would happen is those models would get packed up in their boxes and the loose photocopies and color copies and boards would all get put into envelopes and manila folders and things and just kind of shoved off to the side. Filed. So I inherited some of those manila folders and flat file kind of work to look through all that Draxel jump work. And then over the years, I also, as just how it all worked, I inherited a lot of those gray models and I returned them to Takara. So I personally took the Starscream model back to Takara and said, here, you guys, you archive these things better than we do. You should have the model, not us.
So the Transtech models,
I physically gave them back the Transtech model.
So the Transtech models probably still do exist over in Japan somewhere.
That's what happened at Hasbro's side, right? So we moved on. I was doing two lines, right? I had to then transition the RID product. So adjust, we had to pick names, we had to adjust colors, adjust sound chips, come up with our packaging look. Obviously the Autobot and Decepticon logo hadn't been used for a number of years, so we had to define that for Hasbro packaging. So there was a lot of work there to do, as well as then what's Minicons and what that's going to be and who's our animation partner going to be and all this stuff was all going on. So you can imagine that Transtech stuff got dropped really quick when that,
I remember whenever
dual lining
from the fans' perspective, it's like, we knew of Transtech. We'd seen some of the, like I said, the Starscream, I think, design. And I believe the Primal was also shown. And we were basically bracing for the coming of this line. And then it's just like, okay, we're getting RID. Yeah. And we're like, oh, well, what happened to Transtech? And it's just like nobody talked about it anymore,
Yeah. Well, I mean, I remember at the time we didn't talk about it. I think not that there was any bad blood with Mainframe or anything, but it was, it was just a sudden transition. New people, again, we transitioned from the Cincinnati office to the Rhode Island office. So anyone worked with on Transformers before 2000, December of 2000, you never saw again after 2000. Takara never saw them again. Animation partners never saw them again. Internal Hasbro, other licensing groups and things. So it was like I was the first person and my boss on the new, what became the new Transformer group. So that's a very fine schism right there when that change happened. Which also contributed to all new people. What's this Transtech? I mean, I had people telling me, oh, Beast Wars, that was terrible. We can do way better than that, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, you weren't even there. It was a huge part of what that team contributed to the company.
It revitalized the brand.
That was a good number for a couple of years as far as sales go. But you know, it's again, there's a very not invented here, you know, mentality. I didn't touch it, so it must have stunk, you know, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So you know, I've been on the merry-go-round. I was on the merry-go-round a long time, so I got to see a few of these twists and turns going all the way back to Beast Machine or Beast Wars. So yeah, that transition just also contributed to
nothing
being ever said again and ever showing up again, because it was dropped in Cincinnati and never really picked up again.
Now the decision to kill TransTech and go a different direction, which eventually would become Armada and the Unicron trilogy, you said there needed to be some space made there, which RID essentially filled. So I guess in the transition from TransTech to RID was basically very, very short. The molds were already done. Like you said, you just needed to come up with packaging.
I could talk about that. So yeah. Right before I got put on Transformers, which was in that early November timing of 2000, my boss and the new, what would become, you know, Brian Goldner, the CEO and stuff, his first job, he came in and him and Brian went to Japan and they talked to Takara, and Takara said, well, we have this show. We have a lot of ideas. We'd love to partner with you. You know, the stuff you're doing doesn't work for us. And Brian Goldner was like, absolutely, let's get back to basics. Bam, bam, bam. So it was all in conjunction. Like, TransTech became wrong to answer any of the new questions. Mm-hmm. Again, not wrong for why it was designed and when it was designed and how it was designed, but wrong to be the answer we needed with cool new vehicles, you know, classic characters, get back to basics, put it on Earth, you know, very foundational things that we wanted to see or, you know, we were trying to get at. So that became the focus. And RID was a great opportunity to kind of go, well, it has everything. It's on Earth. It has vehicles people know, you know, it's got a fun story. It can give us time to develop this other thing. Easy peasy. Hasbro doesn't have to invest anything in a whole new series to get us to that point. So it was like a perfect situation for everybody. Takara had spent money on those tools and they were happy to get some extra revenue from that tooling. So again, all good reasons for TransTech to just never be thought of again.
You know, it's kind of unprecedented, isn't it? Before and even since, to have a line, you know, essentially announced, because TransTech was announced, and, you know, this is going to be the successor to Beast Machines. So far as the gray protos were made, and then it just, it died. It had never happened in Transformers before and hasn't happened since.
No, I think it shows the power of a new leader, a leader that understood what the power of Transformers meant to Hasbro, to come in and go, let's get back to basics. I think that's the only reason stuff like that would happen, because he had that power to go, we got to get there faster, guys.
Some 18 years later, and it's almost kind of, you know, the guy was a genius because look how strong the brand is now, you know.
Well, that was the attitude we worked on. Like, not the Beast Wars was wrong. Beast Machines was neither here nor there.
Yeah.
And TransTech was only going to be
continuation of that
again. So it was really, again, it's not nothing. Everything is good. You put effort into everything. Mm-hmm. It does it answer the right question for the right time? And that Armada and RID answered, like, get kids into it again, get kids into it for just like an airplanes, you know, not some sci-fi crazy blue jet with a bird beak, you know,
kind of like the Dinobots, you know. Kids love dinosaurs. Kids love robots. Let's put them together.
So there was, it was, you know, it was pretty straightforward kind of request, but it opened us up to be able to get back to basics, get back to classic names, classic forms, classic colors, kind of the classic storylines, re-engage the fans who that stuff meant something to. I don't think I was ever going to convince anybody that, you know, Batboy was going to be the next big thing, you know?
We spoke about how the transition from TransTech to RID happened rather quickly. How soon after, okay, we've got the RID ball rolling, it's, you know, we got the packaging and everything set, how quickly, you know, how long did you have to work on Armada before we first saw Armada come out?
We dual pathed it. I was working on both of those lines at the same time. But again, the RID part of that was just adaptions, basically. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't have the tooling was safe. The tooling, you know,
it's already done.
All that stuff. So it was really adjusting colors, helping out with the copy and the names. There wasn't a packaging, full packaging team that went to Rhode Island yet. That still was all beginning to be up and running. So my involvement in that side of things was still large in those early days. Did that answer your question?
Well, I mean, the transition, you know, from RID into Armada, you know, we're coming off the hump of TransTech, going through RID and then going back up with Armada.
What I can tell you is Armada didn't drop on store shelves, or the cartoon came out, what, August 03?
I believe so.
So the toys came out around that. I can tell you I was in Japan in summer of 2001 designing Hotshot Armada Optimus for Armada. So 2 years. And during that whole transition from January of 2001 to about that summer was the RID development.
So
6 months for RID. During that, we were probably putting together binders of, like, these are the kinds of sports cars we want to do, or these are the kinds of features we should look at, or let's bring back these characters. It's like a research project, mm-hmm. more so than toy design. We were doing a lot of that for Armada, but Takara was showing us feature models at that time with you plug in something and something happens. And we go, oh, that's cool. That'll work for a pickup truck. Put that in a pickup truck, you know, or that feature's cool. Let's put that in a tank. That kind of development up until I was doing styling development in the summer of 2001. So they already had figured out the models and the movement, and then I was doing that veneering. So the first 8 months of 2001 was my most
hectic,
craziest hectic year. I didn't go home for Thanksgiving in 2001 because I had the whole first wave of Armada Deco due the Monday that we got back, and I had only got the mold plans like the week before. And at that time, we still manipulated the mold plans to make it to be able to make a you know, carry a color further, you know, hey, I mm-hmm. need this to also be that color. So let's move this from mold A to mold B, and that'll be a black. And, you know, so there was a lot of mental manipulation going on. Right. So that first year was,
sounds like if you had a Rubik's cube in like 40 parts and you were trying to get all 40 parts to match up together, but you couldn't get them in the same place.
Now I can add to that, some of those parts can be painted, some of them can't, things like that. You know, some of them can be molded in a metallic, some of them can't, some can be clear, some can't. You have to do all that. That's the job, you know. I'm not complaining.
Here's Aaron Archer and his best friend ibuprofen.
Yeah. Well, I had co-op extraordinary Eric Siebenhaler at that time, and Joe Kide, and between them and another guy named Chris, we managed to get it all done.
Well, we've had Eric on the show before. He's awesome.
Because I remember the BotCon where y'all showed the first episode of Armada, and we got the gift bags, and in the gift bags were some of the first wave randomly put of the Armada figures. It was Hotshot, Cyclonus, and Demolisher, I think.
Yep, and that's first wave.
And I remember, but I guess it's a testament to your speed and you getting them done, because I remember finding them in the stores about 3 weeks before BotCon. So y'all must have really hit a stride at that point to get them out, because we were told at BotCon that was supposed to be the first big reveal, and even y'all were surprised they were in stores at retail at that point. So y'all must have really, once you got past that 8 months of craziness, something must have really clicked, because they were in stores before y'all even knew about it.
Yeah, it was an interesting time to have the two companies working together, you know, so hand in glove to develop a show and a product line and earnestly trying to do it for the betterment of each other. Was really fun. And we got a lot of work done out of that respect, and trust. So yeah, we did, we jammed on it for a good number of years. I will tell you that I have, you know, you'll never hear me talk bad about Takara ever. Those guys work hard and they know their stuff and they're cool dudes.
Well, it opened up you said TransTech, you know, was largely done in-house in Cincinnati, I guess. And then,
the concepting was done in-house, you know,
but beginning with Armada, you had a lot more interaction with Takara,
it was a different type of commitment. So for Beast Wars, they always in the deal, I'll be loose about it, they always have rights in Japan. You know, whatever they work on, they can sell in Japan. But that doesn't always mean it's right for the Japanese market. You know, they might be able to, back then they would squeeze it in as an exclusive for the mom and pop shops, but it really wasn't a line they pushed or carried, largely. So the idea that we could co-develop these things and offer items and features that would matter in their market in a significant way was important too. Cause that hadn't happened for a while either. And Transformers, we don't often talk about it cause it's a global phenomenon, but in Japan, Transformers is not the highest profile robot brand. You know, I mean, I think we have to, unfortunately we have to accept that there are, probably half dozen or more robot brands in Japan that are way more impactful on a daily basis than Transformers. So Takara's always had, you know, I wouldn't call it a chip on their shoulder, but they have to be responsible in a different way, because it's not like it's just going to show up on the shelf and fly like you can. And like we could at certain points, you can never guarantee sales. You never want to be that arrogant, but you know, they knew that they wouldn't be able to sell some of this stuff. So co-development was big for them, and they jumped in it and they got great work done, and we had a great development process, and you know, that's how that all went.
Well, let me ask you this, sir. With the recent announcement that Hasbro and Takara will be sharing a lot of the same US decos, that we're not going to be getting near as many Takara upgrade repaints and stuff, do you think this could lead to that same kind of synergy, or is it just more of a cost cutting measure?
You know, I don't know. I don't know. It's hard for me to know, because I've always wondered, each market needs different things out of their deco was the attitude, right? Hasbro we often go with more muted colors and slightly more sophisticated, less raw out of the tube kind of colors. Whereas Takara, you know, an orange is an orange, you know, black is black. They also, you know, so I thought that they needed to brighten them up for their market. So I don't know if they've come into an agreement with Warden that let's just do the decos for one global market, and maybe we all will see something slightly different, you know, a little bit more brightness maybe. But I don't know.
Of course,
it's a nice effort.
it could be one of those instances where, okay, this is what we're going to do. They do it, and then I'm like, okay, this is not working for either of us. We'll just go back to what we were doing before.
Yeah.
So,
but as you know, Transformers, as it ebbs and flows in Japan, you know, they either do or don't have to put effort the same amount of effort against it. So it might be, you know, I wouldn't call it cost cutting, but streamlining certainly. Let's just do one deco for the world. Makes sense to me.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I think we've shed some light on TransTech, what it is, you know, what it was and what it was to be, and essentially what killed it. A lot of questions out there. I know every now and then TransTech will pop up. You know, here we are 18 years later, and, you know, at least a couple times a year I'll see the words TransTech pop up somewhere. And
it's been my experience that anything that is ever let loose becomes an infection almost. And we can't get it out of our minds, whether it's the animated molds that never came out or, you know, the TransTech or whatever. Once it gets out into the ether, not even with the fans, it's an itch that never gets scratched. That's what's weird.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those things, like, you know, whenever it was announced and it never came out, put this in perspective. There are kids now that are alive that are driving age, have their driver's license, and possibly even married, that weren't even out whenever TransTech was on the table.
Sure.
You know, but yet here we are so many years later, and there's still people mentions it. And I thought it would be important for us as a podcast, you know, as a service to our fellow fans to talk about TransTech. You know, it's gone but not forgotten. And a lot of people that's out there that might be just getting into the fandom, or, you know, they came on during the movies or some of these newer lines, they weren't aware of TransTech. What is TransTech? They may see the word TransTech mentioned by older fans like Don and myself. They don't know what TransTech is. And I hope that we've kind of shed some light on it today with what is TransTech, what it was, and what it could have been. And, you know, I'm kind of surprised, you know, with the designs that are out there now. You know, a lot of people, we've seen them. You know, we haven't. You know, we don't. I know people don't have access to the gray protos, but you know, there's a company out there that took the design sketches for some of the Beast Headmasters that were never released in Japan, that went ahead and made their own molds and put those out. You know, I'm surprised somebody hasn't done that with some of these TransTech designs, honestly.
Yeah,
I still want a Botanica.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Botanica, the one figure that nobody ever got. And it's like, there's some people want her, some people don't.
It just would have been a neat concept to try to go from one form to the other.
It's like, based on here, on her a design. Plant.
Right?
Now you understand why we needed to get back to basics.
Yes.
Yes. I still want one, though.
Yeah.
Well, you guys have any closing thoughts, closing questions?
I can't think of anything.
Briefly,
for me.
Just since RID 1.0 was brought up a little bit ago, it reminded me of something I've always kind of wondered since the brand came out, and I've just never really been too sure on it. But the naming of a lot of these characters, I've always kind of wondered with Team Bullet Train.
Yeah.
You got Rail Spike, Rapid Run, and Rail Racer.
Midnight Express.
Right. Midnight Express starts with an M, and I've always kind of felt that Midnight Express might have been more meant to be the name of the combiner, and the individuals would all start with R's. Was that a thing? Or
What were the names again? Rapid Run.
Rapid Run, Rail Spike, Rail Racer. Yeah. And Midnight Express.
Yeah. You know, I'm not going to disagree with you. That sounds like a better plan. my girlfriend at the time lived on Rapid Run Road in Cincinnati.
Oh, wow.
There you go. Cool. There you go, ladies and gentlemen. That's how names of Transformers are made.
I just kind of figured with all the R's there that, you know, it would have made more sense the other way around. But.
So if you live...
Yeah, no, I think you're right. The combiner should have been, Midnight Express.
If you live in the Cincinnati area and you see the road named Rapid Run, know that there's a Transformer named after that road.
Yes.
Right. And it's a windy road, too, so no train would be on it.
we're going to have Transformers fans renting and buying homes on that road now. They're going to move there.
Well, the problem is, though, it's RID, and although RID has a ton of fans, it's like I'm sure they would want to live on Optimus Prime Lane or Starscream Boulevard or, you know, places like that.
We'll have to play like character bingo some night where you guys just shoot characters at me and I just tell you some goofy story.
Okay.
Related to the development.
Let's do that real quick. Let's just pick two characters. Don, you pick one. Jim, you pick the other.
Now it's got to be from Beast Wars on. I'm not going to tell you anything about the creation of Cosmos.
Silverbolt from Beast Wars.
Oh my goodness!
I love Silverbolt. I love him.
We're just picking a character that we want to see an update of.
No, just facts about.
That's a half tick too early for me. I had the pleasure of working on the Silverbolt Tiger. What was that? Griffin.
The Fuser.
Oh, Tigerhawk.
The big, it's kind of a bigger.
Yeah,
had wings.
Yeah. Okay. Well. All right. Let me pick. Whose idea was it to give Silverbolt and Beast Machines a Condor/Chicken? Where did that come from?
Transformers the Chicken.
Yeah, I like that one. That wasn't me. That would have had to have been Takara. I think they were trying to make a Griffin or something out of it at the time.
Okay, I just was always wondering where that idea, because he was
I worked on the little guys that were going to fit into the ball of that thing.
Oh, that they didn't do.
That we didn't do. I wish I still had the sample of the one that Takara sent me.
Okay, Jim.
Who you got?
Oh goodness. I don't know. I'm drawing a blank. I'm gonna say Tidal Wave.
Ooh.
Tidal Wave. I've always said that's the only guy that I was requested to change the color of, and that's why the color of the show is different than the toy. And that's a pretty good track record if that's the only guy you had to change colors on per management. Tidal Wave, Eric Siebenhaler knocked that guy out of the park. I realized that after we talked about it not too long ago, my kid has that artwork, the package artwork, hanging in his room. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. So I bought package artwork along the way from some of the guys, Don and Marcelo and all the Guido and stuff at different points. So I own the Tidal Wave package art. There's something.
Sweet. Yeah. I've got three BotCon line art, the base line art here done by Don and inked by Jake Eisenberg. I got Dion and Ferric and Shatterglass Prime, or Ultra Magnus. Ooh. Hanging on the wall.
Oh, Mr. Skullhead.
Yep. let's see here. Let me throw one out there real quick. Classics Grimlock.
Classics Grimlock. Yeah. Classics Grimlock. Well, what can I say about that one? That was the first time we got to do something like that in a while. Was he successful? I don't know if he was that successful. I kind of like the Megatron dinosaur from Classics more so than the Grimlock, as dinosaurs go. He was too blocky.
Well, the Classics Grimlock, a lot of people bashed it at first because it's like, well, he doesn't have the Grimlock form, but then a lot of people realized that he was more like the Pretender Grimlock, and homaged that more.
Yeah, he's definitely homage to that.
Yeah, just like Bumblebee with the pretender be, or the
action.
Fight back.
Uh oh.
What the hell?
Did we lose it?
I think it's Skype this time. There you go. You're back now.
You just transformed into a buffering circle and back.
All we heard was what the hell, and then.
Grimlock, he doesn't suffer from the Godzilla thing as much as Krulok does. All these little guys, we always ended up making them look a little too much like Godzilla, in my opinion.
Yeah, he was neat, but he wasn't like the classic, Grimlock has a visual form that is identifiable.
Yeah, he's not
identifiable as Grimlock. He just didn't hit that.
Yeah. He actually looks more Mecha Godzilla.
Yeah. Well, I think that'll do it for this episode of TFYP. Aaron, thank you so much again for joining us.
No problem.
Your knowledge of the brand is always valuable and still continues to be for this day.
And knowing is half the battle.
Yeah, thanks. No problem. I got one of my March of the Robot drawings done while I was sitting.
Always love looking at those when you post them online. So for Jim Black, Headmaster Don, Aaron, thank you all once again for joining us. Check out our Patreon at patreon.com/TFYLP. If you love what we do, it helps us pay the server fees and upgrade equipment and everything. Without your help, TFYLP couldn't continue. So check us out at patreon.com/TFYLP. A quick note that if you are the top tier subscriber on the Patreon, for the future ones here, you will get an autographed copy of Rick's new book, The Unofficial Guide to Vintage Transformers, that I helped do the photography for. You'll get that as part of your patronage to this podcast. We thank everybody who continues to do that each and every month. It helps us a lot. So check that out. As always, TFYLP on Twitter, at TFYLP. It's the quickest way to get a hold of me. Just drop a note and say hi. I love the podcast. I love hearing from fans. We'll see you next time on TFYLP. I don't know what next week's episode will be because that's 2 weeks from now for me as we record this. This week was a challenge because I had to put two episodes together in 1 week, not just one. And I think we did pretty well. And I thank Aaron for coming in at the 11th hour. Like yesterday, I messaged him. I'm like, you know, I'm hitting a wall here. Can you help me out? and I appreciate talking to the good old days. I really appreciate it. Well, thank you all for joining us. We'll see you next time on TFYLP. Good night, everybody.
Good night, all.
This has been Transformers for Your Listening Pleasure, a presentation of tftalk.net. We'd like to thank you for listening and ask that you please rate us on your favorite podcast outlet and share us with your friends. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at TFYLP. Email us at podcast@tfylp.com. This is Paul Lighting, and on behalf of TFYLP, we'd like to thank you again for listening. And we hope you'll join us next time for another TFYLP.